Welcome back, everyone. Happy Tuesday. Excited to continue our adventure through what I can now, I guess, having mentioned a few different things in the last two sessions, tell you is an adventure known as the Tarrasque Task of Maureen Trask. Last time, you guys managed to make your way through a pretty hairy situation, taking out a couple of dire roundworms in the process of escaping one lung. You got into the heart of the mega Tarrasque you all are inside of. You swam through a literal passageway network of blood into the creature's heart and survived long enough to get out and find yourselves in another rather precarious spot. In the process, you did hear Findar reveal a bit of information about potentially how you all came to be here. There's apparently a spellcaster, a powerful mage named Maureen Trask, presumably someone from another plane, one that maybe you all aren't as familiar with. Maybe this plane. You're not sure about that yet either. However, this person, for whatever reason, has orchestrated the events that have led to you all being stuck inside the Tarrasque. And, as we left off last time, you discovered you were not the only ones inside this creature. You had seen a body up in the crop previously, but now, I believe it was Igdri who had come face to face with four more of those killer cells just as they were kind of sloughing off of what appeared to be a still-breathing humanoid creature, although the details are still a little hard to make out. As we begin, Igdri, you are staring down several of these. Two of the cells are still more or less kind of hovering over, grossly slipping around off of the body there in front of you. Or I suppose at this point I could say the unconscious figure there in front of you. The other two have already made some strides toward you. You have Alriana and Findar behind you, although I think Alriana might still be in her shark form?
That is correct.
Okay. She's escaped the narrow valves that were there in the heart, and the rapid healing process has already begun. There's blood pouring in, as you can see on the map. That was a happy accident. And Xavian, unfortunately, found himself north of you all. Find himself in the windpipe. So, the first thing I'd like is for you, Xavian, to roll me a perception check. You found yourself in a maybe familiar, maybe unfamiliar location within the body. What do you pick up on?
All right, that will be a 20.
All right, a dirty 20?
Yes, total 20.
All right, very good. Then, as you, with your keen senses, pay attention, listen in. As a half-elf, you're, of course, trained as a monk, but also pretty naturally good at paying close attention to your surroundings. You've almost, at this point, become accustomed to the rhythmic beating of the heart, not too far behind you now, the various slick and sloppy noises inside of a body are, you've been here long enough now, they might be kind of tuned out a little bit, but you do hear something that's even a little bit strange still. You hear the kind of slapping noise, the kind of flopping of a very, very large body hitting a floor that is very wet. You can tell there's something large flopping around in liquid that is not large enough to contain it, and it is to your, let's see, if you fell out of the hole and you're more or less looking kind of with the wall at your back, the blood's still flowing out behind you, they would be to your left. That's where that sound comes from. Let me see, do I have the image of where you are located? I should. Yep, okay. Rather than post the whole passageway of the windpipe leading down into the lung, I'll just let you know you've got, it looks like about 100 feet of distance to cover before you get into the left lung, where you hear the noises and are fairly certain, at the very least, is the best chance of finding your friends.
Okay. Thinking to himself, he looks up the direction he came from and thinks, probably not going to follow me that way. I'd see if that's them making noise, and we'll start to silently make his way that direction.
All right. Do you move at top speed? Are you just basically running or dashing? What's the plan for getting there?
He's not going to run. He'll move his normal movement speed. Both move actions, normal movement speed, total of 90 feet.
Right. Okay. So, we're going to treat this. I think I still have initiative pulled up from... Nope, I don't have initiative pulled up from last time. Those numbers expired. That encounter is over. I think that the way that this adventure was originally designed, there was supposed to be like one initiative the entire time. And then you basically had things that would happen at like the 10 mark as each round went by. So after, you know, the 10th action, once things kicked off, the body was going to do some weird stuff. That is pretty much by the wayside at this point. So... instead, I'll go ahead and have everybody roll initiative, since the three in the lung are staring down the cells, and Xavian is not in combat, but actively working to get to you guys. Well, that'll make the combat, the travel mechanic a little bit easier. Okay. All right, 13 for Xavier and 11 for Andre. Aurianna's got a 9. Wait, did I read something wrong? Oh, 9 for Andre. Who has the higher dex?
Mine's a plus 2.
As a shark, plus 0.
Okay. Ooh. And I rolled a 3 plus 0. Fantastic. He is a very squat orc in heavy armor, so he has a 3. Delightful. Okay. See if I can get the battle. Well, the battle music was the stuff that was too long, right?
Probably.
Okay, well, we can keep
working. It's probably trying to preserve itself from having to download something for half an hour.
Well, that's fair. We can fight with this ominous background music every once in a while. Maybe I'll add like a thump on the table this is all set up on. We'll see. For now... Zaven, you actually lead us off. You took your moves to get through the windpipe. You have now more or less come up to the very top of the lung. I'll say that you are in the first square at the very, very northernmost entrance to the lung. If you can see there, I gotta make sure I'm
straight above too.
I've got like the full map of the entire body that I'm currently consulting. So let me check the number from your map. Yes, you're in the passageway that leads down into where 2 is. So as you come into where the lung is, you notice that you're still inside of a very kind of chitinous sort of passageway. It's not unlike what you saw over in the right lung, but that one looked much more kind of desiccated and dead, like it was struggling to heal itself after a pretty grievous wound. Here, you have a very live and very healthy, brachial system here. And I think with that blue vein kind of going over the top like that, it's what's leaking. I assume it's got to be bile or maybe some kind of pus down at your feet. So I don't think I would consider that difficult terrain necessarily, but it is a feature that you see this yellow, sticky sort of liquid pooling there. You don't see your allies. In fact, all you see is this passageway in front of you.
Okay, that's all of his actions.
Okay. Very good. Then, I forgot to roll initiative for the cells. Before I added them to the encounter builder. This is fun, messing with some new tech here. 8, and they have no addition to their initiative. 8, 5, and 3. Awesome, okay. All right, that means that Orianna, you are next. Yggdre, you are on deck. Testing.
Test successful.
Okay. Orianna, you're up next, and Yggdre is on deck.
Oh.
Oh, wait, no, you said it was lower. You're right, sorry. So Yggdre goes next, and Orianna comes after him.
All right. How many of these cells are there? You said there's like 6 of them?
There are 4. It looks like they're... As you were coming in, you kind of noticed that there were some that seemed to be slinking away. Whoever that is on the ground, you get the sense that when they, dropped unconscious... these cells may have considered their work fairly well done, and so there are just 4 left. 2 are already within about 10 feet of you, I think we established last time. The other 2 held back a little bit and are a good 20 feet.
Okay, very good. Then I would like to go ahead and rage.
Okay. Gnarly.
And with that rage, I I'm gonna go ahead and I'm just gonna go ahead and attack. I'm at 10-foot range from these guys, so yep. I'll go ahead and attack twice and use my bonus action to attack again. I'm attacking recklessly.
Oof.
So here we go. First one with the lance. Go after cell A. That is going to be... I still have Blessing of the Forge up, I believe.
Yep. That is going to stick until you guys take a long rest or Findar drops unconscious.
All right, awesome. Then that is going to be a 22 to hit.
Hits.
Ooh, that is almost maximum damage.
Woohoo!
Let's see, that is going to be 17 points of damage.
That's no joke. That first killer cell already looking pretty beat up.
All right, then I'm going to go ahead and attack the other one with my next attack. Try to lance that cell as well. That is an 18 to hit.
Definitely hits. Man.
This is
a train killer or something.
Damage is significantly lower on this. This is only 9 points of damage.
Okay, that cell. Also, I don't know if you could see it like writhing in pain so much. This one seems to take the blow from the lance and rebound a little bit. It looks hurt, but not in a particularly bad way just yet.
All right, then I will bonus action to attack with the back end of my lance, kind of spin it around and stab out with the spike on the back end. And I'm going to try to finish off the most damaged one.
Okay.
That is a 17 to hit.
Definitely hits.
All right, and this one only does a D4. So that's going to be 9 points of damage.
All right, and with that blow, the first killer cell you set your sights on, the one that actually got close to you, closest to you, maybe by a few inches, the lance penetrates its outer membrane, and it begins to leak fluid and just kind of deflate, and it lets out this sad sort of like floppy hissing noise as it just slowly falls apart. It ends up lying on the floor looking like a deflated pool floaty with a weird red center. But that one is toast.
All right, very good. Then, satisfied with that, Igdri will turn his attention to the wounded cell, but he is going to go ahead then and back up about how far in front of Alriana and Findar is he?
I believe we had put you... I think there's about 10 feet between you and the rest of the party.
Okay, so he will just back up 5 feet. So that will put him at 15 feet distant from the remaining cell.
Cool. All right. Okay, very good. Does it for Igdri's round. Alriana, your turn. What would you like to do?
All right. You watch as Alriana hunkers down and swims through the ever-growing pool of blood as she gets to the second closest.
I think swim would probably be a pretty strong word. What's your size as a giant shark?
Yes.
How many squares do you take up?
Probably a lot. I am categorically huge.
All right.
Some then sort of like flop and roll.
I'm probably going to have to call it. I don't think swimming is possible. You can definitely like scooch your bulk forward, maybe 5 feet or so. But if functionally you're beached right now, the blood is not flowing fast enough to provide purchase for a swimming creature.
That's fair. If they are still within about 10 feet, I do have reach as a creature of size.
Okay, so you're all right. Let me look at how this is laid out, because if you're going to reach out to where they are, like physically, I don't know how you're not going to squish Igdri. I just don't see how that's possible.
Would you prefer if I go to the side and try and reach out?
I mean, I'm desperately trying not to railroad. I just don't know how a giant shark in this space is it? We established how far across is a giant shark, because the ceiling in here is about 15 feet. So, as far as room to like to just even maneuver without. I mean, we've got these big veins and things kind of taking up some of the almost like ductwork above you.
Can I bite through them on my way there?
You can. I'll say biting the veins are is entirely possible. Sure. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Okay. Yeah, essentially she'll just wrap her teeth around some of the veins and just bite down and pull as she bites through the veins and starts making her way around.
Yeah, it's a fairly contained. I'm not going to say you have to like make a roll to attack this thing. They're big, but you're much bigger. So biting through that closest of the veins, the blue tubes there, you watch as it bursts open and this salty rush of liquid comes into your face there for a moment. This blood unoxygenated, as I understand it, was headed another direction, but now it also is pouring into the lung. You've definitely made it so that it's going to fill up faster. I still sketchy on whether or not swimming will be an option, but you have found a use for your giant shark form here. Killer cells are still doing their thing, though.
Would it be possible for me to get it to at least one of them?
Let's see, you've made enough space. Why not? Go after the one that was closest there. The two back by the body, kind of down there where the branches of the red and the blue are in the kind of southeast quadrant. Those are still fine. But just there in the middle where that passage, that bronchial passage is pointing down. And I keep forgetting you guys actually have numbers I can be referring to. I'm looking at a different map. That's no longer in the way. You've kind of torn your way through into where all of that is. Go ahead and make an attack.
Ariana stretches out her shark bulk, tries to close her teeth down for 24 to hit.
Oh yes, very much so.
For a total of 20 points of piercing damage.
And like the nastiest, like the all-time worst boba ever. This thing just like in your teeth. For a giant shark to put this thing in its mouth, a creature that is like a medium-sized ooze, more or less, it's pretty much like you got a big grape and just... It's done. It's toast. Never a chance.
All right. That would end Ariana's turn.
All right. So the first two cells are super dead. Their turn is not going to come at all. The one that is kind of hovering, not hovering, but like vibrating a little bit, like over the torso of the unconscious humanoid there. They're not super intelligent. It is an extension of the immune system of this creature. So it does what it is programmed by the body to do. It is going to move toward, I guess, the giant shark now that's closest to it with a single-minded purpose. And it can go how far? Oh, dear. Oh, I see. Okay. So the cell actually slips off of the body, and you watch as it, I don't know what the opposite of coalesces would be, but it like oozes down into the folds of the flesh there, and it disappears from your sight. It can, however, reappear. This is weird. It's like it doesn't have a speed per se. It can move through the body tissues as though it were difficult terrain. So I'll treat that like it can go 15 feet. And it will emerge. Yeah, I think that takes it just outside your... I mean, it's like it's in the flesh. I don't think you can see it. It's like something with meld with stone moving through a wall. Like, you don't get sentinel against a creature in a wall, do you?
No. I'm more thinking just wherever it comes out, I should get an attack of opportunity against it.
Okay, so... No, the ooze in question was, at this point, 15 feet away from Igdri, because he backed up 5 feet. 25 feet away. It has now schlorped down into the body and moved through the floor of the lung 15 feet in order to come up. I'm going to say this thing wants to come up right under where Alriana's shark form, the head is. So we'll do it this way. Alriana, give me a high or low.
Hi.
Okay, so the cell that you did not see before does not reappear in your sight. However, as you're kind of trying to right yourself, Ariana, you feel something attach itself to what amounts to your chin, like the underside of you, and it's spread out at this point. It's not like a pustule or like a big, you know, throbbing, pulsing bulb on your body. It's almost as though you've got a. It's almost like someone smeared like a rub, a gelatinous sort of rub across your sharp chin, and it burns. It deals how much damage here? 1d8. 2 points of acid damage, and it is attached to you. It managed to kind of come up from the floor and spread enough that it is now like attached to you. It will present a fairly difficult target for. Let's see, Adri, I think, yeah, because you're close enough for a sentinel. Sentinel's a reaction, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you've not used your reaction for this turn. The third hit was a bonus action, right? From Polearm Master?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Then you may, you can make an attack. And I'm going to see if you hit the creature or Orianna. Because the thing is spread out pretty thin.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Check. Good call. Good call. You maintain your polymorph.
Okay, that would be for the attack a total of 19 to hit.
Okay, with a 19, you are a very well trained student of the spear. Your lance aims as carefully as possible for the red kind of center eye that you still see, almost like the yolk of an egg kind of still attached to Oriana's underside. With a 19, you definitely hit the creature, and I would say that's high enough that you kind of pull back just in time to avoid piercing Oriana's thick hide. So go ahead and deal your damage.
All right, then the damage is 13 points of damage.
Okay. Very good. Nice. All right. And that does it for that killer cell's turn. Believe it or not, the other killer cell actually rolled lower on its initiative. Or it tied with Findar, but neither of them actually has a dexterity positive score. So, oh wait, no, I'm sorry. The killer cell has a 2. I did not see it's minus 1 to dex. So, regardless, the outcome is the same. Findar is still kind of brushing himself off. You see that he's got like blood in his hair that he's trying to like wring out a little bit. But as he looks over and sees you just kind of going to town on several of these oozes, he sort of claps his hands and says, "You're doing a great job. The blessing's still doing what it's supposed to do. Wonderful. Great." And he will extend a hand. He'll cast a cantrip. See if he can hit him with a sacred flame. Now let's see if an ooze can avoid the save there. Almost certainly not, but you never know. Does he roll well? No, he does not. He takes the full 2d8 fire damage. That's going to be 10 points of damage there. All right, next up, Xavian, you are still in the northernmost corridor of the lung. You hear the sound, the din of battle. You hear the kind of the noises of a shark popping through the flesh of a cell. You hear the kind of battle cry of Igdri as he's raging. They seem to be within, obviously within your scope of hearing, but you cannot see them hardly at all. What would you like to do?
So for map reference, where is the battle taking place?
Okay, so the battle is down. Findar is situated a little bit south of Four. The hole where the blood is pouring in is where the rest of the party came in. Further south of that, you've got where that bronchial goes down like a slide into the blood. That's roughly where Igdri is. And Alriana has managed to tear through the veins such that she is basically on the ground level where Five is located. If you know, the Five is hovering there above that uppermost passageway. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, looking at the map, there's actually no direct route to them.
All right. If you'd like to make your way forward and see if you can suss out a path as you go, I can give you a survival check to see if you can do that, because it looks to me like, you know, metagaming from up here, you could make it through the bile or the pus or whatever that yellow goo is into that main passageway that travels kind of northeast to southwest, and then you see there's a little hole just above number five.
Right.
That strikes me as like a play slide that you can use to get down into where you need to be.
I guess there is pooling inside of it, so I guess that cutout is not just for reference to see inside, is it?
No, it's. I'm gonna treat it like a gash put in there, probably through all the thrashing that Alriana did.
Okay, so
thank you, Jay.
He is going to take his move action to follow the sound of Igdri yelling.
Okay. Give me a survival check with advantage to see if you can get there without getting turned around. And yes, a McDonald's-style play place modeled after a respiratory system would be pretty sweet.
Survival. Oh, he actually does have survival. That is a 16.
Okay, great. So as you go, your feet barely touching the floor, monk running nice and quick through where you're trying to get, you barely pick up on the kind of acrid, gross smell of the yellow pooling liquid there beneath you. You come through into another passage. You keep listening to the of Igdri roaring into battle. You hear the of Findar cheering on Igdri as he fights and casting his sacred flame, and finally you slide down past where number five is there, and you come out landing on your two feet there at the base of that bronchial. You have now re-entered the picture, and Igdri, you watch as Xavian suddenly kind of pops in from above, and you found yourself right back with the party again. Very well done.
So that would take two move actions. One move action would have got him to three, and the second would get him down.
Yep.
And that would take five squares. He can move seven, so he is going to move two squares south of the end of the slide.
Okay. You find yourself just about. You still got about. You got one square between you and the last of the cells. You are more or less standing within, not quite within reach for a melee fighter without reach, but within spitting distance of the unconscious form on the ground. And as you look through the kind of wiggling lens of the ooze's body, you see the pointed ears of an elf, a set of armor that looks very well worn, but also may have a bit of a sheen of magic to it. This is clearly an adventurer, and you see he's lying on his side, But you see his torso still taking shallow breaths. He's not dead. He's just knocked out and flopped in a rising pool of blood. What would you like to do?
Okay. Does he recognize the armor? And I guess related to that, what setting is this? Is this whatever 5e's standard world is?
It is not. Your character has no idea where you are. The armor that you see is unlike any that you're familiar with from your home plane. I don't know if Xavian's from Faerun or Phantanar or wherever, but no, this is a pretty unique setup. You see nothing familiar about this person's accoutrement, except that, again, the pointed ears and kind of the hair looks like it's probably pretty well taken care of most of the time when it's not, you know, lying down in blood. This is a person who cares about their looks, and they look pretty... Well, let me check something real quick as far as his loadout. What is he carrying?
Okay, so for reference, Xavian was made for the Exandria series that was done before.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Okay, yeah. This is metagaming above it all here. You guys are in a setting that I don't imagine any of you have used before, unless you're familiar with the work of the D&D like supplement DM Dave on Instagram and stuff. He's one of a group of people that make additional stuff for 5e, and his personal homebrew setting is where everybody is right now. Marine Trask is native to that place. It is called Omeria, if you want to look it up on your own time later. But that is all news to everybody but one in this party. So Xavian is quite without reference as he looks at this elf guy lying on the ground.
Okay. Has pointy ears similar to mine, but that armor is weird.
There you go. Okay, your move is expended.
He moved twice. His swift was examining the guy.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Very good. Then that brings us to next. Idri.
All right. Currently, there is still one cell that is out of reach, correct?
Correct.
And there is another one that is still attached to the chin of yon shark, correct?
Correct.
All right. Well, I think there's really only one thing left to do. He's got to stab the shark.
Oh, man. Okay. Give me a roll.
All right. Here we go.
Give me another high or low.
So can you repeat that? Was that for me?
Yes, another high or low from Alriana.
Hi.
Okay. And Idri, if you're making an attack, go ahead and let me know how that goes.
Yes, indeed. And that is a total 20 for the hit.
All right, very good. Now, Alriana rolled high and Idri rolled a hit. So, you managed to get away without damage yet again. Madam Giant Shark. Go ahead and roll damage, Idri.
Aha, that is 14 points of damage.
Woohoo! And you, again, with this kind of masterful... I mean, again, you're a trained lancer. So when it comes to lancing things that look like boils, you are probably the best suited for something on this scale. And that's pretty much exactly what it looks like when you sink just the blade of your lance into this thing's center mass one more time. It, again, leaks out all this fluid. This time you actually see the central nucleus, the red, like, yolk kind of pour out through the gash that you've made. And the whole thing sort of falls apart with this sickening kind of noise. You do still take 1d8 of acid damage at the beginning of the round, Ariana. Wait, no, I'm sorry. You do not. You take that damage at the beginning of its round, and it is dead. So you don't take the acid damage. It's just dead, and it falls off of your shark chin. You are freed from the clutches of the killer cell.
Huzzah.
Indri has saved thee, and you still got a bonus action. You have the, again, the other creature is still pretty far, so I think you can mix it up. You can move and use a second attack, right?
I think so. I think in D&D you can move and attack in as long as you don't exceed your totals.
I believe that's correct. Let me double check.
Yep.
Okay. Movement and position. Moving between attacks. If you take an action that includes more than one weapon attack, you can break up your movement by moving between those two attacks. Yep. 25 feet, you can move 10, make an attack, move 15, make an attack again. So, you have plenty of speed to go from one attack to another. In fact, I guess you only have to really step like 15 feet to get a shot at the last remaining cell.
Okay, then he will
unless
move
you just
up
want to close the distance
until
and, like,
he is
10
feet
it,
away from it,
which you're welcome to do. I mean, if you really want to charge it or something.
I think that he will move up until he's at the 10-foot range. And then he'll go ahead and attack it with his next attack. Reckless. Oh, that is a d12. That is not a d20. Hold on. Alright. And then that is... Okay, so that is going to be a 19 to hit.
Hits. Roll damage.
All right, that is 14 points of damage.
All right.
And he
describe how you dispatch your foe.
Aha. So for this one, as he sees there's only one left, he will cry out in a draconic roar of victory and battle, run forward, and kind of pole vault by sticking the back spike of the spear into the lung tissue and pole vault up into the air before bringing the spear around and just coming down, link down B attack style with his spear right on top of it.
Ooh.
And like he'll never even touch the lung. He's just like hanging, he's just holding on to the side of his spear as it has impaled this thing.
Okay. That is a very impressive description.
And would you like an athletics check for that?
I would. And I think I'm also... how am I going to do this? How am I going to... Okay, so please to recall, the last remaining cell was still sort of just... doing its thing right there on top of the unconscious dude you walked in on. So give me an athletics check to see if you can avoid absolutely shish kebobbing the elf.
Okay, definitely. Let me see. Do I get advantage on athletics checks? I think I do, actually.
Does rage or anything affect that?
Let's see. Advantage on push, pull, lift, etc. Advantage on strength attacks, advantage on dex saves. This is an athletics check.
Yes.
I'm going to have to look it up. I don't.
Can you use your strength and ferocity in attacking to... can you focus through the rage such that your attack does not cause collateral damage? That's what I'm looking at here.
All right.
Especially since you described it as being similar to a pole vaulting action. That's kind of like athletics in a nutshell.
Yeah, he might have got a little carried away with that. Let's see.
Understand.
Okay, so it says, I'm looking on the D&D Beyond question on rage advantage. They said strength athletics check is a strength check, so yes.
Oh, yep. Okay, great. Well, very good then. Roll twice. Take the better option.
Well, one of them was a 5, so let's hope it's better than that. Well, the other one was a 9, so let's see. Ooh. For athletics, that is going to be a 15.
Man. 15. Let me check the stat block. 15. Even though this guy is prone and lying there, unconscious, your attack... It would normally have, hit like center mass. Thankfully, your enthusiasm carried you slightly further than you anticipated, and your blow, which might normally in this situation have gone kind of just to the left of the center of the chest, it glances off at just the right angle. You still land your attack on the thing, and you stab it through, pinning it to the ground, just to the side of this elf's rib cage. But you personally, coming down, your momentum has to go somewhere. So you land on the guy, and you hear his unconscious form just wheeze hugely. You don't hear anything break. But you've successfully managed to take out the last of the cells and not killed the elf lying at your feet. That brings this encounter to a close. I'm going to need to call a quick break. I got a text message about a work thing here I need to look at real fast. We will pause and return in a couple of minutes. I'm going AFK, so see you in a little bit.
Well, I definitely completely forgot in that there was a body underneath that thing, so...
That could break things if you kill someone that's supposed to give us information.
It didn't happen.
Of course, I'm not certain how this party would really take that. Barbarian, a monk whose listed profession is mercenary. What is Ulriana's worldview? I don't know that I've ever picked up on that throughout the stuff I've seen her in.
Currently, drop that.
Alignment isn't necessarily worldview. Or not,
okay.
Not enough.
What details are you looking for specifically?
For this case, would be collateral damage. How would she feel about people not involved getting caught up in a battle.
She would probably not like it, but if someone was being hurt, and there was no other choice, she would see the wisdom of removing the potential threat.
And then we've got an NPC cleric who is probably more of a stickler.
Well, just a heads up to you all, I have one more rage before I need a long rest. So yeah, after that, it is going to significantly impact my damage abilities.
Those only come back on a long rest? Huh.
Yep. Also, it's going to impact my resistances, which go through the roof when I'm in rage, but when I am not, they are not nearly so good.
Interesting. Wondering about balance there, since monks get their key points back on a short rest.
Well, I know, like, Warlock gets their spells back on a short rest, but they also only get, like, two spells. So, they get far fewer than the other classes do. So it could be that Monk gets their key classes back, but Rage does a lot. Like, when I'm in Rage, he's a nearly unstoppable tank, which is what he was made to be. So he's pretty much immune. In fact, he is resistant to everything except Psychic. And he gets extra movement, he gets extra damage, he gets advantage on almost everything that he does. So, Rage is very powerful.
How is that tracked in 5e? Is it number of rounds per long rest?
It is a minute duration. Rage is always just a minute, so it's 10 rounds. And it is a number of times per long rest, and that goes up with your level. So at this point, he's at 4.
Does it go away if you don't hit something like 3-5?
Yes, it does. You have to take damage or give damage, or at least attack something.
And if you don't, you lose the remaining duration. So that... That's almost a bit harsher than the 3.5e version, where you would keep the remaining rounds.
Yeah, once it's over, it's over. And you only get so many.
Does a barbarian have much of anything from a short rest besides HP then?
Nope. At least not this build. This is the only barbarian in 5e that I've made. So there may be another one that does, but otherwise, no. Short rest just gives you back HP.
Okay.
We're back. Everybody still here?
Welcome back. Yep.
All right. Very good. I appreciate your patience, guys. All right. As you take a look around, you guys see before you no more threats. Instead, there's just the form of a, what you can see now is a tall, fairly well-built elf, maybe a little bit bigger, broader, in build than you might expect to see, not quite as lithe and slender as some elves tend to be. Oh, this is tough. I gotta pull up the block while still. Okay, here we go. Pull the description up properly here. The fella is here. He does seem to have stabilized. You can sense that he's not actively dying. You don't see any parts of his body that are currently bleeding, but he is still just kind of lying there. And as Yggdre, as you step down off of his form, having killed the last of his aggressors and now roused him from his unconsciousness with a really sharp blow to the sternum, he kind of coughs a bit.
Oh, what happened? Where am I? Am I still in that thing?
You are alive. And for that, you can thank me.
And he kind of squints at you a little bit, holds his head, starts kind of, you see him touching different parts of his body and wincing a little bit. This is a thank you, nameless bird man. You see him start to get up a little bit. Of course, the blood kind of running down off of his armor is, it does seem to be getting everywhere, but as he gets to his feet, he looks around. Where is Susan? Where are my allies? What happened?
We do not know. But you could tell us what you are doing here.
Well, I'm here for the weapon.
Ah, the weapon.
You see, he's only he's kind of glancing back to you to answer your questions, but he does seem to still be looking around. You see him fish around on the ground beside where he was lying there, and he pulls up a wicked-looking sword. He continues to look around, and you see that he's got what else does he have in his stat block there? He pulls a spear. Excuse me, not a sword, but a spear up from the ground. He finds a shield that you can see kind of the blood rolls off of, doesn't seem to cling to quite as well. And once he's got the shield and spear, he turns back to you all and says, did the witch send you as well? Are you here for the spoils?
I can't necessarily speak for the other two, but I just woke up here, like, less than an hour ago.
So you did not come in through the lung, like us?
We came in through the mouth.
You're not dead. That's quite something. Impressive.
You said something about a weapon.
Of course.
And he very kind of briefly explains. This is my name is Farom Trakan.
I was brought here by that witch, the gnome, the crazy green hair, Trask the witch. She hired me and my friends. We were supposed to, well, she...
And you watch as he kind of holds his head for a second, and then he sort of smirks a little bit.
I must admit, it was quite impressive. There was a minaret, and I had like a spear, it sailed through the air, and the time stop, and anyway, we crawled in to the wound. I and Suzanne, Begrier, did we have, who else was, was it just the three of us?
He kind of starts getting lost.
Doesn't matter. This thing, she wants it for a pet, and she promised there's a thing, there's a weapon in here. We had it, a sword. It made from the essence of this thing. What was it called again? What was it called? My head's still throbbing. And you hear Findar actually pipe up a little bit. Magical item, you say? Something unique? Something very particular? Yeah, that sounds about right. You watch him kind of drum his fingers on the lid of his bag, but not really go into any further detail. Farum explains that, he and his three other companions were tasked to retrieve the item that Maureen Trask believed would allow her to basically dominate this mega Tarrasque and make it her thrall. Unfortunately, they were separated, as you all have gotten pretty close to doing yourself, and without each other to back each other up, they ended up in some pretty dire straits. Farum here, not a spellcaster, a fighter by trade, managed to hold out for a long time. You happened upon him not too long after he fell to an onslaught of these killer cells, but he's very grateful for the heal, and I suppose I'm along for the ride. Would you all help me find my crew, if we can? I can't promise a splitting of the weapons per se. I think Trask has plans for those, but I doubt something this big and this beastly isn't full of interesting things. Surely there's something around here we can sweeten the deal with. Are you sure you didn't come in the same way? You were in the mouth. How did you get there?
That is a good question. Personally, I'm beginning to think that we might all be dead, and this is a test to enter into the afterlife. But to each their own.
Gods portend, that's not the case. I've got a lot of fighting left to do. Well, regardless, he kind of looks around and, again, with no major threats around you, you have a new ally who, at this point, Findar does walk over. He pumps him full of a couple of cure wounds spells, and soon he's back on his feet. He still doesn't look like he's at the peak of his health, but he requests the possibility of at least maybe a short rest. Let me see. He's stabilized. He's got one hit point. Findar's going to roll two or maybe one cure wounds at, let's see, we'll call it second level. Wow, he's going through those pretty fast, actually. Maybe we'll do a third level cure wounds, actually. Still got several of those. All right, I'll run all those numbers. In the meantime, you guys can talk amongst yourselves, think about what you'd like to do, where you'd like to head next. Looking around the lung itself, you've got the map there in front of you. You don't really see much in the way of other exits. The bronchiole that you traveled through, Xavian, doesn't seem to go much of anywhere. You realize that most of these passageways are just carrying fresh oxygen and air to the lining, the walls of the lung itself, enriching. The heart pumps out is enriching the air that then moves from the lungs out into the rest of the body. And as you kind of chill there, you realize that there hasn't been a big exhale or a big inhale in quite some time. You suspect that the thing might be asleep or unconscious. You did, after all, do quite a number on its respiratory system. So its hit points are probably pretty low. It might be resting. But it seems like one of the only options really on the table now would be to find another method of going further in if you're looking for the allies, or perhaps going back and seeing if you can find a way toward the nose if you still intend to leave through the nose there.
Around this time, Lorianna would drop her polymorph. As she returns back to her normal size, she turns to the others and says,
So we have some people who are interested in collecting fashioned weapons?
Well, if what the witch said is true, then there's a sword, big old nasty looking sword. I want to say Suzanne had it when I saw her last. And yeah, that's right. That's right, she had it. She had it. If we can find Suzanne, we can find the sword. I want to say there might have been a... Was there a set of armor as well? It's still... You can see him still rubbing his temples, even as he secures the shield to his arm and brushes himself off with the last little bit of what he's got going on. Well, when last I saw my friends, they were headed further in. I suppose I can't ask too much, but if I retrace my steps, maybe we can find a way out of here. Findar says.
You know where they... You say they were headed in. This is a lot like a body. So, were they headed into the brain or into the stomach? Would rather not go to the stomach.
Well, I ended up here. The last I remember us being together, I want to say, might have been closer to... was it the windpipe? Yes, it must have been. The parting of the ways, the fork in the road. We were in the throat. That's what it was. We were headed for the mouth. We were trying to leave. And you see him get a little bit more animated. He starts to kind of move a bit. Oh, but then it was moving and oh gods. Oh, she must have been. Did they get swallowed? I was thrown about so hard. And Findar, you see him kind of like tug on the guy's sleeve a little bit. Says, "Well, why don't you take it easy? We can look for some evidence, I suppose. Why don't you walk us back in that direction?" And you see him just kind of nod and start to walk. He'll take you guys up, if you're willing to leave, unless you guys want to go ahead and move in another direction. You are welcome to do so. Getting out of the lungs is going to require either going back up through the windpipe or pretty much making your way back into the heart.
Stick around. He seems to be the person who's the most knowledgeable, even though it might be scattered. It's better than nothing.
Thank you. May the gods smile on you for this. Wait till I get my hands on that gnome. And you see him kind of start stamping forward. Over the course of the next several minutes, you guys do march back up through the northern corridor. Xavian, it's all painfully familiar to you. You only just got back from this direction, but as you go back the way that you came, you find that there is a bit of an incline. The creature might be getting up from whatever slumber it might have been in. The climb is not easy, but it's also not difficult enough to really rate a check at this point, I don't think. Instead, you do find yourselves way back up at a sort of crossing of the ways. Let me see if I can get you a snapshot of what I'm talking about here. Okay, there's a link to Drive. Just in time, Quicksilver. So you guys make your way back up through the windpipe, and you can see there in the middle, the blue kind of passageway that you worked so hard to get up through is now behind you. To your right, you smell a very pungent kind of odor, and you recognize to your left a passage that leads into the crop, the spot where you found Findar. Where would you like to go? Actually, as Faram kind of exerts himself to get up to this spot, He finds himself a little dizzy once you guys reach the pinnacle. So, I'm going to say, give me a perception check. I'd like to see what you guys can hear. All right, Xavian, perceptive as always. You hear a rumbling, a groaning, what sounds almost like a muttering, kind of coming from, of all places, the from the crop. To your left, you hear the sounds of a voice. And Idri, you hear it too. What would you guys like to do?
Is Igdri at point again?
Yeah, he'd be up in the front. Probably walking with their new friend. Yeah, Igdri would go in that direction to go check it out. He's got dark vision, so he's kind of looking forward into the space.
Okay. All right, where's my crop map? It's in here. There you are. Okay, so as you guys make your way back into the crop, coming down through the entry that you left from what seems like hours ago, but may or may not have only been a few minutes, depending on how this has been going, you can't really tell. As you make your way inside, the sound of cursing starts to really lift above the din. A few dwarvish curses punctuate this yelling and sort of a back and forth switch between common and dwarvish. But as you round the corner, you come into the crop and you see sort of sitting in the corner over where that giant egg was, actually, Igdri, that you were so interested in. You see a fairly young looking dwarf in some, let's see, where's the description at? Here we go. Here we go. Yes. You see a dwarf clutching his arm, or I guess rather where his arm would be. He is bleeding pretty profusely, and he's cursing to himself. He's wearing robes, not looking happy at all. And as soon as you guys make it in, Farum bolts toward him, just shouting out, "Begrir! Begrir, what happened?" "No. Oh, that's stupid. I thought I could get out, but those teeth are just massive. And those, have you seen all those oozes up there? All the, And he kind of cuts off. He clenches his teeth. You see that he is still in tremendous pain. "Why aren't you healing yourself? What's the matter?" "I can't. I'm out. I'm spent. I don't know what I'm going to do." And Farum looks at you all and says, "Quick." Tindar scuttles over as well, puts his hands on him, heals a little bit. You guys have stumbled upon another member of the party. His name is Begrir, and as he breaks it down a little further, he also was a part of this traveling troupe, the adventurers who offered to help Maureen Trask for the right price. Tindar is able to provide healing, so he will join for sure. But as you look around, okay. That breathing noise is new. Did I do that? All right, I'm kind of serious. Did someone add something to the sounds? That's really weird. I don't remember that at all. Creepy. Okay, well, regardless, you find that this dwarf, again, Begrier, Bronzefeet, he identifies himself. He says,
so, if you all can help us get out of here, we'll make sure that it's worth your while.
You watch him kind of gesture over and see a chest sitting open not too far from him. He kind of indicates,
that was where I thought I had all of my potions, but I summoned the wrong chest. I'll tell you what, you can have what's in there if you can get us out of here.
If you look inside, you find 4,000 silver pieces in this little chest. And as he clutches his now no longer bleeding stump where his arm had been, you do find yourselves standing in the crop with now 2 new allies, leaving 2 more to be discovered. Farum looks to each of you and says,
I suppose at this point, your guess is as good as ours.
Well, I think it's all right if you want to come along. We should probably find a way out of here.
Thindar kind of nods.
I should say so. This is definitely not hospitable. I do wonder where the other 2 might have gotten to, though.
I suppose. Well, we didn't run into any of them before. How did you get... We were here earlier. How did you get down here, sir? And Beggar breaks in.
So I got swallowed up into this thing's... what do you call it?
Saliva. The gland.
The place where all those oozes were just coming out of. I thought I could get out. Thought I could squeeze through some of the gaps in the teeth. Should have known better.
Now he's looking at his arm kind of forlornly.
Only thing I can think would be to continue down.
Farum says it.
How are we supposed to survive the digestive system of a stories and stories tall magical beast?
And Begrier looks at each of you, says,
well, they seem to have gotten this far. I count at least 2 good casters among them. For starters, I hate to do it to poor Suzanne and
wow, I have completely blanked on the other guy's name. That's terrible. I'm a bad, bad team leader. Oh no. Where's he at? This should let you know, by the way, that there's still quite a bit of this thing's body to be navigated. Where is the other person?
Whatever. Jeremiah. Jeremiah's in here somewhere. Suzanne is in here somewhere, but they're not dead yet. I don't suppose it'll be that much worse for us to take a good long rest. I'm completely spent at this point.
And Farum kind of nods a little bit.
Does that sound all right with all of you? Rest up? Heal?
How much time?
What did that witch say? Something about squeezing out more magic while we're in here?
She stopped all the time, right? He looks back and forth. Farm says, you're right. She did. He actually pulls out a timepiece. You see, I don't know what your familiarity level might be with a kind of a rustic looking sort of a like a pocket watch. The world of Omeria is it has its tinkerers and there's some technologies that are a little bit further forward than most of the like the Forgotten Realms are. But you see him kind of look at this timepiece and say, this here, this can't be right. It's saying that we've only been in here for a very little while. But that can't be right. That I know for a fact. I'm gonna try something. And you see Faram kind of go rustling around through one of his pouches. He finds the spot that he's looking for, kind of tucked into this carefully concealed pocket on his cloak. You see him remove what looks like a ring. He kind of slides it on, thinks pretty closely. This is not terribly sure. It certainly does seem like things work a little differently in here. Have you all rested at all since you've been in here?
Only a little bit.
And it worked. You did. Was it you got your breath healed up a little, the normal sort of thing?
Everything seemed to go as planned.
And Findar says, may I see that? And Varum hands it off. Findar kind of looks at the timepiece up and down. You see his eye kind of flick to his bag once or twice, and he sort of nods. He says, all right, everyone. I'm not usually inclined to introduce my friend to folk this early along in a partnership, in a cooperation, but I feel as though we may be in need of a very special favor. Okay, Rumi, speak up. And as you look down, yes, the flap of the bag begins to, for lack of a better term, begins to smile. You see the edges turn up a little bit. The bird-like stitching almost begins to, I don't know, it seems as though it were in fact alive. And of course, then that makes it even almost less surprising when a rather sonorous voice speaks. Now you don't see the movement of lips per se, the bag doesn't flap around like a puppet, but you do, each of you, hear a voice in your heads. And it says, hello, I am Rumi. As you can see, I and my friend Findar are on a bit of a traveling mission here for my father. Findar says, he's not your father. He is my father. He made me. You know this. We've been through this before. He's not your father. He is, you know what? I'm not doing this with you right now. Rumi continues to speak into your mind. I serve a powerful demigod. He resides on the astral plane. He is a collector of unique items, masterful works, things that he can tinker with. Here, on this plane, I suspect he has a task for Findar. And Findar kind of grimaces a little bit. And for you. I do not know exactly what has tuned you to this cause, but it does seem that my patron wants to see you succeed. Do you have an offering to make? And if you do, what would you have me request of my patron? Vindar says, he does this sometimes, he'll hold it over you. Looking at Varon, he says, I don't think that the Griffin will be particularly interested in the Tarrasque tooth sword you're talking about. Sounds a little gory for his taste. Do you have anything shiny? Anything? And he kind of just trails off as though he's still thinking, kind of just seeing what he thinks might suit. Farum kind of looks to and fro, comes up empty a little bit. I suppose there's this. He hands the timepiece over to Findar. He says, will this do? Findar looks at it. Well, where I'm from, items like this are very few and far between. And it is quite an emergency. Rumi, I'll make it my job to find something suitable for the Griffin. Can you help us out here? The Griffin says, or the Rumi bag, you hear the voices in all of your heads, once again say, I believe it can be arranged. Sure. And you see the bag smile again, but the kind of living vibe you got from it almost seems to recede. The magical resonance in the room begins to fade a bit. And you each start to feel very, very sleepy. And that's where we're going to cut off for tonight. I hate to cut it off so short. I know it's only 10. However, we've got a couple of things we need to take care of here at the house. And as you each start to drift, you have the option to fight it. But the blessing of the Astral Griffin is probably going to intervene in this moment. Try to get some things arranged so that once you set out in earnest to find the other two members of this party, maybe you'll have a leg up.
Awesome.
All right.
Will this count as a long rest by chance?
It will. By the time you guys wake up, you'll be back topped off. So will the other two in your party. And I wouldn't normally directly intervene quite this quickly, quite this way. But it really didn't explain much about what to do with these two, like, nearly dead party members as you're making your way into what is, I mean, pretty honestly, the truly gnarly, gross bits of this Tarrasque's system. Yep. Next week, Digestive Adventures.
Fun time. I look forward to it. And I apologize. I am fighting the effects of the Astral Griffin myself. It's been a long day. And
no worries.
Yeah, definitely need some of that rest.
Yeah, as I recall, you were walking on water the other day.
The blessings of the Griffin upon you, sir.
Indeed.
Rest well.
I will try my best. Have a great night, everyone.
All right. Night, everybody. See you next
good
time.
Good night.
Later.